Hello and a very warm welcome to another episode of the Get Football Tactics podcast. I'm your host Neil Shelath and I'm really looking forward to this one. I've been joined as always by Varun Vasudevan. How are you, Varun?
I'm good and I've come with my boxing gloves on. So I hope you guys are ready for today.
Yeah, I hope so too. And we've also got Alex Barker. Alex, happy to not be talking about international football despite my best efforts.
No, because I've actually had to watch a game.
What?
I know. What? I know. Do you know what?
How could such a terrible thing happen?
I'm quickly realizing that I'm going to be doing more tactical stuff at work. So with the Euros coming up, I've realized I don't think I can go into it completely blind. So I had a horrible realization yesterday. I was going to watch Atalanta matches, which were next on my Serie A hit list. A bit RB Leipzig, and I saw England playing Brazil in half an hour, and I was like, "I just need to watch this. I really don't want to, but I have to." I got about halfway through, and I just started watching YouTube on in the background.
it's such a boring affair. That's terrible. But yeah, I hope this is more entertaining for you. Then I think this is right up your street. So, yep, as the title says, we are going to be debating about the Premier League title race. We've each picked one team which either we think are likely to win or some of us simply got to pick the teams first. You'll find out by the end. But basically, we'll all make the case for each of the three contenders. Obviously, that's Arsenal, Liverpool and Manchester City, the top three, who are separated by just 1 point going into the last 10 games of the season after this international break. So it's definitely a very exciting title race. And it's a very close one, clearly. So we'll be making the case for why each of these teams can and can't win. So the way we're going to do this is we haven't prepared notes, or rather shared notes, as we always do. Each of us is going to get 15 minutes for their team. And in that time, they will defend why they think that team can win. And the other two of us will ask or raise arguments against the points they raise. And then at the end, of course, we'll share our predictions. So, if you guys are ready, let us begin with the league leaders, Arsenal. Varun, do you want to start us off with why you think they can win it?
I mean, I think all the signs point to Arsenal winning. I know it's a really close title race. I mean, considering the fact that all the three teams are so close, just pick any stat, any underlying, and Arsenal are dominating it. They are highest on expected points. They have really good expected goals allowed. And you can see it on the pitch as well. They have a huge amount of game control, game state control. They've been dominating teams. So I wouldn't say dominating, especially in the first half. And to be fair, they were kind of figuring out their attack. But I think they've now figured out the formula. They have a good midfield setup going. They have figured out Declan Rice's best role. Jorginho has come and done well. And the attack is also flourishing. Kai Havertz is flourishing. So I don't see any reason this time. I mean, we know what happened last year. We know historically Arsenal's last few games, especially the last 10 games, their run-ins have been a little poor than expected under Arteta. But I don't see this time why that happens. I mean, previous years, the issue was depth. The issue is not having genuine quality compared to a City or a Liverpool. I mean, it was always just a case of a fortuitous first half of the season that just fizzled out. But this time, I think they actually are in control of their fate and they're in the driver's seat. They have squad depth, they have quality that is matching the other two. And I think their tactics are also really sorted out and working well. So that would be my push for Arsenal. I am happy to hear you guys fight this out. And I don't know what you guys will ask, actually. I mean, I don't see any reason why this doesn't work for Arsenal.
I mean, I agree that at the end of the season, mate, I do actually think Arsenal will be top of the table. Four set-piece goals.
that's a good one, yeah. Do you want to touch on their attack first, or shall I ask her a different question?
Okay, I mean, let me rebut what Alex is trying to say. I think what Alex is trying to say is Arsenal haven't been really free-flowing when it comes to open play goals. They haven't got too many goals. I'd actually liken how their attack is looking to City's title win before Haaland. right? There's no out-and-out goal scorer. There's no focal point. But there are four, five, six players who just keep chipping in with goals. And if you see the goals in all competitions, I have the table in front of me. You have Saka at 16, Trossard 11, Odegaard 9, Havertz 9, Martinelli 8, Gabriel Jesus 8, Declan Rice 6, Nketiah 6. You have like 7 or 8 people who have scored 6+ goals. And if you compare this to that City team, that one, Mahrez was their highest goal scorer with 24, Kevin De Bruyne 19, Sterling 17, Foden 14, Bernardo Silva 13, Gabriel Jesus 13, Gundogan 10, Rodri 7. So it's actually very similar. If all of them just score 20% more, you'll end up with 6-7 players with all of them 15 to 20 goals. And I think Arsenal's trajectory also is very similar to that City team. That City team won the league, obviously. But then they added that goal scorer in Haaland, and then they took it to the next level and won the treble. So I do think Arsenal have enough to win the league, and they'll have 6-7 goal scorers with not too many goals. And then all the rumors suggest they want a proper presence, a striker up top, like a Victor Osimhen. That's the rumored target. Once they add that, then they'll actually be a far superior treble aiming team. And then they'll actually be in the Champions League, in the FA Cup.
I'd like to raise an objection. We're talking about this title season, not next title season.
I know, so I'm just saying.
I think all arguments about not this season should be thrown out of court.
I'm just saying they have enough to win the league this season. And if they add the striker, then they will aim for the treble next season as well. So, I mean, both angles, I think they're good.
We'll do a treble part later. But okay, point taken. I think one question which I have to raise, not very tactical, but what you touched on in your sort of first, your opening statement about their run-in. Obviously, I'm not touching on whether or not they will bottle it, which is the big talking point always. But like, just if you look at their fixtures, they have a really tough fixture list, especially in April. So, I mean, obviously, after the international break, they've got Manchester City, which is the last day of March. But then in April, they've got the Champions League tie against Bayern Munich, home and away. They've got Aston Villa in the league in between those legs. Obviously, they're doing really well. Then they have Wolves, and then they have 2 London derbies against Chelsea and Tottenham, who are not having the best of seasons. But again, the London derbies, they're tough fixtures. So when you look at this run-in, which is something this squad has never faced, right? Because even last season when they were doing their title challenge, they weren't in the Champions League. These are two properly elite competitions with really tough fixtures. Do you think, I know you said they have shown some depth, but do you think they have enough depth and quality to manage that run-in, because they've never done that before?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point. It's pretty clear among the remaining three teams for the title, Arsenal have the toughest run-in. I mean, if you look at the average points of the teams that the teams that they're facing have collected, Arsenal are facing the toughest one. But I also think they are peaking at the right time to handle such a run-in. I mean, if they were having a few issues, right? If they were figuring out their plan, which I think Liverpool and City are, to be very honest. City, we'll come to them, but I don't think they look solid tactically. There are gaps, there are weak spots, there are injury concerns. Arsenal don't seem to have any of those. So I think they're well equipped to handle such a title run-in. And I think there's a very big difference compared to last season or the season before. Like last season, Arsenal rotated their playing 11 the least in the league. And Man City rotated their playing 11 the most. It was like two extremes in terms of philosophy. And I think that caught up in that last 10 games. City had a wonderful last 10 games and Arsenal had a horrid last 10 games. And somewhere that lack of starting 11 rotation caught up to Arsenal. And they didn't do it for a few reasons. Arteta probably didn't trust a few people, or he was just a little naive in thinking that he can just keep plugging his main 12, 13 players and he can win. I don't think he's been that naive this season. He's rotated well. He's rested well. He keeps giving those little bit of, especially in attacking and midfield slots, he keeps giving those rests to his players. And then he gets them on as a sub, or he gets them on in the next competition. So I think they're balancing their competitions really well. Yes, if they go deep in the Champions League, that also starts affecting. But I actually will argue the opposite. I have a feeling the momentum will help them. just think if Arsenal beat Bayern soundly, and that's very possible. Bayern are not having the best of seasons. Tuchel is leaving, and Arsenal defensively especially look very solid. Imagine the momentum it'll bring to their Premier League run. So I think it could actually have a good compounding effect. These players will get even more motivated, and it might work out for them in both.
Mr. Vasudevan, I want to pick up on a line you said earlier. You said about if Arsenal score 20% more, they'll basically seal this title. Now, I've come with the numbers. I want to pick you up on this. I don't know, do you have the website FB Ref open, or for Bref, as the majority of people call it?
FB Ref, as they all call
majority?
in the room with us. The majority. Do you have Arsenal's page open?
Yes, sir.
Could you just read to me their top five players? You can go top seven if you want as well. Who've overperformed their non-penalty expected goals by the most. Not per 90, just in total.
Okay, give me a second.
Yes, of course.
I love the way Alex is approaching this.
Yeah, he's taking this very seriously.
Of course, this is
all his like law shows are really coming to the fore.
This is a serious case. I am Matthew Murdoch right now.
Okay, Declan Rice plus 3.6, Leandro Trossard plus 3.4, Saka plus 2.1, Eddie Nketiah.
Okay,
plus 1.2.
Are you sure you've got this from the right place? Because that is very different to what I have in front of me on FB Ref.
All competitions. You want only Premier League?
Oh, yes, I would like the Premier League, thank you.
Okay. Then we are looking at Declan Rice plus 3.8, Leandro Trossard plus 1.7, Ben White plus 1.3.
Yes. Then we've got Gabriel on 0.7. Then we have Saka on 0.6 and Nketiah the same. And then we have William Saliba. So we've got three centre-backs in there and Declan Rice at the top. Now, do you think that those players can sustainably overperform their expected goals throughout the rest of the season? Yes, they've done it so far, but I think we can write Ben White, Gabriel and Saliba off to set pieces. Declan Rice has scored 6 goals, overperforming by nearly 4. It's a large overperformance. In fact, you compared this Arsenal team to the previous iteration of Manchester City without the forward known as Erling Haaland. And Manchester City's top overperformers in the 21-22 Premier League season were Kevin De Bruyne on 9.3, Rodri, fair enough, maybe not able to outperform sustainably. Then Bernardo Silva.
That's a good long shot, though.
Bernardo Silva, who's done it pretty much every season. Then Nathan Ake, that's one defender. Then Riyad Mahrez, I think again, fair enough to assume he could perform on a regular basis. And we have Fernandinho up there as well. So when you say Arsenal scoring 20% more of their goals, I don't think that necessarily all comes down to the quality of player they have. I think that's coming down to their set pieces. And if their set pieces dry up, teams find a way to better prepare for them, you know, they will still be very good because Gabriel Ben White are two very good players for set pieces. But is it going to be enough? I think there's a clear difference there in the method and source of overperformance between former Manchester City title-winning sides and this current Arsenal side.
I mean, really good points. But I do want to point out, and this is where I think individual overperformance on expected metrics, any team that wins after a point cannot rely on that. So I totally agree with you on that. I do think, though, if you look at their last 5, 10, 12 games, they've been creating a lot better. Their XG metrics, I think in 6 of their last 10 games, they have 2.8 plus, 2.8, 2.9.
I have an objection to raise to that.
And I know what it's going to be.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about the last few games, right? And I think I would go as far as to saying that from December, Arsenal have actually never shown their real level in terms of their results. Because if you look at their last games, their XG and all looks fantastic. Like you said, they're the best team in the league by all metrics almost. Best XG, blah, blah, blah. But it's been really inflated by these games where they've smashed, lower table teams with extreme low blocks, poor defenses. 6-0 West Ham, 5-0 Burnley, 6-0 Sheffield United, 4-1 Newcastle.
Come on, there's a Liverpool.
5-0 Crystal. Yeah. But I'm saying, you look at these games, most of their big XGD has come from these games. Yes, there's 1-3-1 Liverpool, which I grant. But then, I mean, they also had that, you know, match against Porto, which was really tough. Brentford, again, they didn't blast past them. So my point is, their XG and XGD has been inflated in these games. Previously, they lost those three games, which, I don't think they were that bad either then. So my point is, but these games where they've inflated their XG and XGD are against these lower table teams, which they aren't facing anymore, right? They've got
Sorry to interrupt my fellow lawyer, but I have a separate point on this as well that I think is very important to raise. In games against Newcastle, in games against West Ham, in games against some other teams Arsenal opened the scoring of set pieces. So it's changing the game state. It's a lot easier to create open play expected goals when you're already 1-0 up.
Yep, great point.
Yeah, I mean, all good points. And I can't say I disagree, but I mean, that's the point, right? Even when they are not playing champion football, they end up winning. And when they are playing good football, they end up thrashing teams. I mean, both ways, as you look at it, they do end up on the right side of the results. And coming back to my original point, if you do look at the trends, and even if you look at, you know, shot creations from open play or open play XG, the trend has been upwards. I mean, they haven't been that reliant on set piece XG, and they have been creating an open play. Yes, probably they haven't seen the goals for it immediately, but then in all of these games they've created a lot from open play as well, like in West Ham, Sheffield, Newcastle, the Liverpool one as well, Palace, Forest. I mean, and these are the kind of teams they're going to face again. So I mean, I don't think it's a big deal. I only think they're improving as the season is going on and on. And yeah, maybe in the next 10 games, they will have 3 or 4 of these stuck-up games, as you guys said, where they're not, you know, free-flowing and they rely on a long shot or a set piece or Declan Rice or Gabriel or someone overperforming and getting the win. And I think it's going to be a combination of both. I think it's going to be, you know, 4 or 5 blow them off the park kind of games, 3-4 gritty win kind of games, and maybe 1 or 2 draws or losses. And I think that's enough for a title win.
That's my alarm. I don't need to change that.
But alarm for what?
That's not my alarm. That's the default sound for the timer which I'm using. But in any case, your time's up, Berlin. So thank you very much for your defense. We will discuss this at the end. Now we're going to move on to Liverpool, whom I will be defending. So before you guys come at me with the XG and all that, I know Liverpool's numbers don't look that great. And in fact, I would go as far as to say that before the season, when we were doing our, like, I think we did a pre-season Premier League predictions board where we touched on Liverpool, or certainly I talked about them somewhere, where everyone was in agreement that they didn't really have a title challenging squad. They didn't look as strong as they have done. Everyone knows their squad building has been questionable. They've lost some key players, blah, blah, blah. And I concede that if you look at just purely things from, like, on paper, they aren't the best team in the Premier League. They're probably more of a champion, top four contending level. Absolutely true. However, what I would like to point out is that football's not played on paper, and that the best team does not necessarily always win. Be it a single match.
The eye test guys are going to love you for this.
Be it a single match or be it a whole competition, you don't have the best team always winning. So my point is, Liverpool have gotten this far, 28 games in, their level with the top, the team at the top. We have to acknowledge the non-tactical, non-statistical, but more mental, motivational side of things, which is that Jurgen Klopp's leaving at the end of the season. So these players will be incredibly motivated to win the title for him. And we've seen some incredible performances, incredible turnarounds off late, where you thought they couldn't do something, but then they still did. So my basic argument is that they've gotten this far, 10 games to go, they can make the final step. Why not? I think Vernon has
So what you're saying is, you've said a lot of reasons why they shouldn't win the league title, and I quote, key injuries, blah, 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 but you think they're going to do it because of the power of love.
And friendship. but seriously, I would also point out that from a tactical point of view, I think Liverpool deserve a great deal of credit, which maybe they haven't been given, because, and especially Klopp and the coaching staff, right? Because they have been given a bit of a tough hand with how the squad is, but they've adjusted brilliantly, both, you know, overall, like over the course of the season, how they've changed their approach, and also specifically in situations. And I'll give you some examples of that. So for one, obviously we know this season they aren't playing in the more controlled ground possession based style, which they were sort of leaning towards over the last couple of years. They've gone much more direct, and that's a product of various things, including the fact that they don't have an elite number six like Fabinho. So they've been happier to go direct. They have this whole gaggle of attackers who they're using really well. And then even in like specific situations, right? This is where I think Klopp deserves a lot of credit, which is, so for example, for the most part, Liverpool's main attacking threat in behind, besides, you know, if they don't have a pure striker, has been Mohamed Salah, right? For many years, we see him going in behind on the wing. Now he's been injured of late. And if you've noticed in the last few games, Luis Diaz's role has changed a bit, because instead of just hugging the touchline as he often used to do before, or coming deep in the channel, he has become the main threat in behind for Liverpool off the left. So they've adjusted their system, their setup, in a way to enable Diaz to get in behind a fair bit. And we have seen him get in behind a fair bit. He hasn't scored as much, which is a different concern. But the point is that tactically, they're amazing at adjusting to different situations, to the players they've got, and obviously to the opponents. So I do think they deserve credit for that. And that's why they can win games, even if they don't have the strongest squad. Now, what are your problems?
I'll go first. To be very honest, firstly, I actually like your points. I like all your points. I think Liverpool do deserve credit. On paper, they are the weakest among these three. And the fact that they're in a title race, we've said this before, credit to Klopp, credit to coaching. And I do agree, power of love and friendship goes a long way. But I have one point against that, okay? I'm going to use your logic against you a bit. I was recently making a chart on the XGD trend of all three, you know, and I put out a whiz on the title race, and Arsenal were pretty much comfortably, you know, the best looking one and most consistent one. City were decent. They were mostly in Champions League territory. Liverpool's XGD trend was just bonkers. It was like going between mid-table to title winning, like it's just up and down, right? And I think one of the reasons is, if you compare all three, Liverpool so far have got the most home points per match amongst the three teams, but also the least away points per match amongst those three. So this power of friendship and love really works at home, where they are a fortress and where it's amazing, Anfield is bouncing, booming, all that stuff. It really doesn't work as well away. So even though Liverpool have the easiest run in amongst the 10, they have a few away matches to contest. The first being Manchester United. And see, I know United aren't
in the... Of course, he brings Manchester United into this.
I know United aren't in the greatest form, but they beat Liverpool in the FA Cup without being...
Which was a complete fluke. The flukiest fluke of all time.
See, but that's what's going to happen. Away from away, and Liverpool were not good in that match. I mean, I'm not saying United were vintage United, but Liverpool were not good. They were kind of clueless. Against a United defense that's not been great all year, they were kind of clueless. And we have seen this multiple times, especially when they go away, they do struggle. Imagine not beating United, and that's their third match from now.
It could never be me.
What an argument. What? I think that wins. Not beating Man United.
You don't deserve the title.
So I'm just saying, imagine the morale drop if they lose to United two games from now, okay? To this United. And after that, they have some tough away. Fulham away, West Ham away, Everton away, Aston Villa away.
I mean,
these are not super easy fixtures for them.
Those are winnable.
They're winnable, but among the three...
I mean, if you look at their away losses, right? In the league, or even drop points. The big one was obviously Arsenal, which I grant was a bad performance, both player-wise and tactically. I think, you know, I mean, it happens, right? When you're adjusting from match to match, that happens. But let's look at their other away defeats. Tottenham early on in the season, which I have completely forgotten what happened in that game. But I'm going to pretend...
Liverpool fans will kill you now.
Yeah, right. I remember what happened. So, I mean, what a game. First game of the season against Chelsea. And then, yeah, Luton Town, I mean, that was, yeah, that was just one of those ones. I'm just looking at their XG in that one. It was 2.6 to 0.8. So, yeah, I guess.
You can't go by Liverpool's XG. There was this another graph I'd made on the shooting profiles of all the teams. And Liverpool's shot quality is just like rubbish. And their shot
quantity... But they've got some damn good ball strikers.
I know. I mean, they're really relying on just shooting a lot and hoping the numbers by percentage just end up being good.
I don't think it's just by percentage. I mean, you look at their players. Diego Jota, clinical.
They have good shooters. Mohamed Salah. They rely a lot on it.
Yeah, but I mean, if you, what's the point of having good shooters if you don't rely on them, man?
Okay, this would be a good... I think this is a good point to insert my argument, which Liverpool have something that neither Arsenal or Manchester City have to cope with. You know what that is?
The Europa League.
Yes. Which is a big problem. Because if your strategy relies a lot on, the power of love and friendship, well, you know, we don't have to say a lot. But that does come into it. As we said, yeah. I think you've said some good points. And I think a good point is Klopp leaving is a factor here. Now, Jürgen Klopp clearly wants to leave on a trophy. Okay, because that would be ideal. He's Liverpool's manager. He wants to leave on a trophy. Now, he could. It probably is trying to push for the Premier League. But if he really wanted to do that, he would probably throw the Europa League aside. I quickly read to you Liverpool's starting 11 in the second leg of their tie against Sparta Prague after winning the first tie 5-1.
I remember.
Remember. So you remember Dominic Szoboszlai? Andy Robertson, Cody Gakpo, Darwin Nunez, and Mohamed Salah all played that game.
They did, yeah.
What happened in the next game, Neil?
That's a good question. They
lost to Manchester United.
Lost to Manchester United in the FA Cup.
Yes, as many pointed out, they seem to run out of energy by the end. So, if Jurgen Klopp is clearly, I think, powering through over the Europa League, otherwise in a tie he ends up winning 11-2, he wouldn't field a lot of his key starters. What makes you think that he's going to go balls to the wall for the Premier League and not keep the Europa League in his back pocket, try and win that so he can leave on a high and still remain in top four?
Good point.
So to be honest, I agree that you should focus more
and also just to add, go on. Atlanta, Benfica and Leverkusen, Milan, Roma, one of them. So this could be their...
Marseille as well, thank you.
Yeah, okay. Benfica, Marseille, I mean, come on.
Who's their potential semi-final opponents?
Liverpool, Atlanta face Benfica, Marseille.
Right.
And the winner of that face Milan, Roma, Leverkusen, United. Yeah, so West Ham United. So, I mean, it's not going to... It's not another Sparta.
Yeah, I get you. No, but look, here's my point. So as far as the Sparta is concerned, he did bench Virgil van Dijk, Salah, Szoboszlai, Conor Bradley, who's played quite a bit as well. I think
he didn't bench Salah. Salah started.
Nope, he benched him.
In the second leg, Mohamed Salah started.
Wait, sorry, am I looking at the first leg?
Yes, you are.
Oh, yes, I am. Okay, yeah, my bad. Okay, but I mean, so even in the first leg, he did bench people.
Salah was injured at that point.
Yes, but I mean, he didn't play still. In the second leg, he benched Luis Diaz, van Dijk, McAllister, Elliot. I do think he could have probably gotten away with putting on a couple more kids. But the point is, he doesn't have the squad depth.
He also brought Van Dijk and Elliot on, even though they won 6-1.
Yeah, but then I also think there's maybe an element of like load, which I'm not an expert on, to be honest. But I do think there's an element of load management and stuff for us to consider as well. Which is like, so his sports scientist or whoever may have advised him to give, you know, Van Dijk half an hour or whatever. For that game. But yeah, I think obviously the lack of depth is a problem. And I concede then that, you know, being in two competitions is not ideal. But what I would say is it's a good job the second competition is the Europa League, because the pressure to win it is not as much, right? So if he does end up throwing the Europa League away, let's say, which is looking unlikely currently, but if he does do it, I don't think it's as big a deal. And I think it's a decision he can still make if he wants to. He's also not in the FA Cup, which, I mean, like Warren said, yeah, really demoralizing. Imagine not beating Manchester United, blah, blah. But on the other hand, that does save you a couple of fixtures as well. I think that's useful.
But the, now, the, look at the Premier League is... fixtures. God.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say, if you look at the Premier League fixtures, though, Brighton, not in the best of form, very beatable. Sheffield United, beatable. Manchester United away, probably the toughest one, I would say. But, I mean, this one could go either way, and I would back Liverpool every day of the week because Manchester United are really bad. Crystal Palace, beatable, very beatable. Fulham, Everton, yes, Merseyside derby, but again, Everton have not been great. West Ham, if they're still in the Europa League, that's they're almost surely going to throw it, so very beatable.
you can't use the Europa League argument for one team and not another.
No, yeah, I can, because Liverpool are chasing for a Premier League title, so it makes sense for them to prioritize the Premier League. West Ham are not winning the Premier League, so it makes sense for them to prioritize the Europa League.
I think there's a key flaw in, you've said this a couple of times in the argument so far, there's no evidence Klopp is not prioritizing the Europa League as well.
Yeah.
There's no evidence he's going to bench like all of his starters and save them key fixtures.
If he loses the United game, he's not going to be prioritizing the Premier League.
Yeah, that's a very good point. If it looks likely they're not going to win, he's going to immediately go, well, I want to end my tenure on a high. I'm going to focus on the Europa League.
Yeah, but then if you don't win games, you don't win the Premier League title. So, I granted that if Liverpool lose against Manchester United, it's bad. But I think they should consider not losing that game.
But I think even if they draw, I think he's one or two fixtures away from going. It's just let's focus on the Europa League. And the point we've mentioned is if they go far in it, that is a game on a Thursday night. More frequent as well than the... It's the same frequency, on a Thursday night while City and Arsenal play on Tuesdays and Wednesdays.
Yeah, but then the Premier League adjust the schedule accordingly to like Sundays instead of Saturdays.
I think if you ask Jurgen Klopp if the Premier League adjusts the schedule accordingly,
he's going to cry about it once in this run. You know that.
Oh, more than once, to be fair. but no, yeah, I agree that they... have like it's not ideal the situation they're in, but I would still go as far as to say that they have the best they clearly have the best fixture like Premier League run in of the three, and therefore yes, it's a Europa League, but at the same time they're not playing Bayern Munich. Atalanta are different, and so I think it's fine
to say this is their best this is a good fixture running. Like, they're still going away to Man United.
I'm saying it's better than the other two, basically.
I haven't got the other two to hand, but, like, I look at this and I personally only see Sheffield United as,
Brighton.
The most beatable side. Like, Brighton, yeah, maybe, but then...
They're in horrific
form. Crystal Palace under Glasnow clearly seem like a different threat. That's timer. There we go.
Yep, that's time.
Oh, God, now it's my turn.
Good debating. Yes, we will round that up at the end as well. Yes, now it is your turn. Tell us why Manchester City are going to win the league.
Okay, so Manchester City, everyone's talking about how bad they are, but can we remember the fact that if you go back and compare their last season to this season, same game weeks, they're just 1 point worse off. So clearly they're not doing that bad. Can also tell you that Manchester City are the only team unbeaten in all competitions in 2024. In fact, most of their underperformance, like in the league, has come from a four-game period where they basically fell apart in November. They drew 4-4 with Chelsea. Again, terrible. They drew 1-1 with Liverpool. Not great. They drew 3-3 with Tottenham. What are you doing? And they lost 1-0 to Aston Villa. And only a few games prior, they lost 2-1 to Wolves. 1-0 to Arsenal. Now, what do we know that Pep Guardiola does every single season? What he does is he learns and adapts throughout the year. Now, personally, what I think has happened with Manchester City is they've got their recruitment a bit wrong. It wasn't working. If we go back to their Wolves game, if you look at the lineup, you'll see, once I can actually find it again on my page, which I might not be able to, but I remember... that Mateo Kovacic, here we go. But Walker, Akanji, Diaz, Ake, Kovacic and Mateus Nunes in midfield, Foden, Alvarez, Doku, Haaland as their lineup. Now, if we go to their recent game against Bournemouth, there is no Kovacic should be seen. Nunes starts on the left and comes off, because of course he does. And in the middle, we've got Foden and Kovacic again, who comes off for Kevin De Bruyne, who's coming back from injury. Kevin De Bruyne will be missing out throughout last season. So I think Pep Guardiola is actually working things out. I don't think things are that bad. So realistically, if you're going to put odds on a team, it would be Manchester City.
All right. First objection I will raise is from the points you made about the run of fixtures where they dropped points. Well, I've got good news for you. If you look at the remaining Premier League fixtures, they've got Arsenal next, who they dropped points against. Then Aston Villa, they dropped points against them. Then they have Tottenham as well, drop points against them. And I think you said they lost to Wolves, drop points. So those are four games in the Premier League of 10 against teams they have failed to beat in the reverse fixture. Add to that, Chelsea in the FA Cup semi-final. Chelsea have been almost a bit of a bogey team for them, not ideal. And then they've got two legs against Real Madrid in the Champions League, which will not be easy. So if you look at April, basically, I mean, the Tottenham fixture has not been rescheduled, so I don't know where that's going to go. But they've quite possibly got out of eight fixtures, six against these teams they have failed to beat, plus Real Madrid. How do you think they're going to cope with that when they also don't have an insane amount of squad depth, to be honest?
I think they cope with it in the same way they did last season, where they dropped points against teams like Newcastle, Aston Villa, Liverpool, Brentford, Everton in the first half of the season. And then in the second half of the season, they went on an almighty winning streak and didn't drop points against anyone. And those teams like Newcastle are in there as well, who they dropped points against, and all of a sudden they are beating. So I think your point on, yeah, sure, it's a tough running, and they're going to be facing teams they dropped points against before. But as I said, the start of the season, they were a different team. We're now dealing with second half Pep Guardiola. And I don't know if you know, Neil, but you're talking about their ability. You know, they're in other competitions, they're in the Champions League, etc. You know, how do we know they're going to be able to handle, you know, all of these competitions and all these tough fixtures? I would look in their trophy cabinet right now.
So I want to come in here. I think a lot of Alex, your arguments are around this is what Pep does or this is what City do when they're at this point in the season. But I think there are some major differences between this City and last year's City. They actually had quality, they had depth, they had the tools, the resources for Pep to tweak it and find a solution. I don't even think they have it. There is a genuine gap in midfield. That is a structural problem. That is a team building problem. They had to get recruitment right in the summer and they probably didn't. And I don't think Pep has anyone to suddenly turn to or change the system to suit. So I think this is a little different from the previous problems where tweaking could help. I don't think he has the tools or resources necessary to tweak and go on a legendary run. Secondly, you can see that the main difference between last year and this is their defensive performance. I mean, in attack, I'm not going to say anything. Kevin De Bruyne and Haaland, when they're fit, they'll score, you know, and even the others are pretty good. So I don't have any issues in attack. Their defensive performance is a whole step lower than last year. Last year, they were the best defense in the league. They were like 0.7 or 0.8 XGA per 90. This year, they are almost 1 XGA per 90. And even if you look at their recent games, I think the Liverpool one was 2.7 XGA, and they keep just getting
three clean sheets since the turn of the year.
Exactly. I mean, their last 10 games, they have so many games. 1.3 XGA against Newcastle, 1.4 against Burnley, 1.4 against Chelsea, 0.9 against Bournemouth. And you see it in the games as well. Forget the stats as well. They leak that chance in transition. They have that pass that enters their area. There is that one cross that people are struggling to deal with. Consistently, they're getting into really bad defensive situations. And I really think if City were, you know, if it was the opposite problem, if they were tight defensively but struggling to score, a bit like Arsenal, then I would still say it's possible. You know, you can just be tight defensively and then somehow a set-piece goal, Kevin De Bruyne magic, Erling Haaland magic, you can keep getting 1-0, 2-0, and on a good day, 3-0, and you can win. With defensive issues, you're not going to get far. I do think they have a few losses coming to them in this run of 10. As Neil said, four of the teams they've struggled against for a reason. They are good in transition, those teams. Wolves are the kind of team that hurt you in transition. You know,
I would like to step in here because you've mentioned about how this is a team, if they were struggling at top, but okay defensively, you'd feel like they could go and win it. I'm actually going to put to both of you that is the case, despite what you've seen. Because, as we said, since their mid-season wobble, they're actually top of the Premier League on points since they lost to Aston Villa on the 6th of December. Now, yes, I do think, I don't think you're wrong. So I think there are some problems on the field defensively. You know, they are seeing a lot of XG. But do you know the major difference between this season and last season, guys? It's the fact that Erling Haaland has gone from outperforming his expected goals and being Europe's top scorer to underperforming his expected goals. He's currently on minus 2.8 for the first time in his entire career. He's ever underperformed. But it looks like he's creeping back into form. He just scored four or five goals against Luton. That was insane. I know that wasn't in the Premier League, but there's warming up signs there. He has had injury problems this season. Now he's getting into the running. If Erling Haaland remains fit and can regain his finishing touch, which, let's be honest, is the likely cause, considering he has been a sustainably good overperformer throughout his career in terms of finishing, then all of a sudden, you have the world's best striker back at your feet, scoring the goals. I'd actually argue, in fact, I think Neil would argue himself for Liverpool, doesn't necessarily matter how many goals you're conceding if you're scoring a lot more than other teams. And sure, Arsenal are top scorers at the moment, but if you get a full-firing Erling Haaland back, which I'd argue is a likely situation, probably the most likely, then I think City actually blow away everyone else. Even though they're currently top of the league since 6th of December, I think it gets better.
Yeah, but I mean, that's not the point Varun raised though. I think he was talking about the defence. And I mean, if you're going to say that they'll just outscore everyone, I mean, possibly, but that's not, I mean, the big difference between City and Liverpool in this respect is that Pep won't be happy with that and he will change stuff to prevent that from happening. He won't take a 6-3, right? He wants a 2-0 way more than he wants 6-3. Whereas Klopp and Liverpool are clearly playing their style of play, their tactics have changed in a way which shows that they are happy to outscore people. City won't do that. Their tactics aren't set up that way, and if it does happen, it will stuff will change, and we saw that in City Liverpool where he took off De Bruyne, right? That's a decision Klopp would have never made, but Pep wanted some more ball retention, whatever. He took him off. He's a game winner. Why would you take him off? But Pep would.
I'd say that Pep has already. I think you said Pep will change things. I think he has already changed things, as you guys remember in my opening statement.
My point is, if what you said happens, that their attack gets even better and they smash teams like 6-3 and stuff, I'm saying Pep will not be happy with it. So he will change stuff to prevent that from happening, like we saw against Liverpool. Because that game, honestly, anyone could have won that game after 1-1. It could have easily gone either way. It was really transitional. The moment Pep took De Bruyne off, Liverpool got even more sort of momentum. And at the end, they were way likelier to win it. I would say that is largely because Pep took De Bruyne off. So
I think
these are the decisions he will make.
I think there's a lot of talk about defences for a team who've only conceded more than one goal at all this year once against Newcastle, again on 3-2. Now, I'm not saying that your guys are not wrong. I don't think their defence is perfect. I think that is a valid point. But what I am simply saying is they're already on court. They've already been the best team in the league since their mid-season wobble, since they were playing, you know, largely different personnel, since Pep tweaked things. If their defences are great, but they're already still, like, since that period, the best team in the league. And I think, Neil, you've just said yourself, they're changing to try and control things more. And I'm simply saying that Erling Haaland's finishing is going to improve. I don't necessarily that means you think you means you start beating him 6-3. I just think it means you turn 1-0s into 2-0s or 0-0s into 1-0s and open games up more. Then I think what we're saying is they're going to get better.
Yeah, I also have a point on the Erling Haaland thing. Keeping aside the overperformance and underperformance, I mean, I think that's a bit natural. Strikers go through that. You also have to look at other things. His progressive passes received has come down this year. His touches have come down. His penalty area touches, attacking third touches have come down. Yet his shots remain a little high. There is a bit of sense that the team is also not able to provide that much for him. And that has changed recently with Kevin De Bruyne coming in. But you could see it when De Bruyne's not on the pitch. It's not really superb service for Erling Haaland. There is that drop in terms of the amount he's getting the ball in the right situation. So I actually think Erling Haaland is doing better. He's putting himself in different situations. He's trying to carve out more shots. I think last year he was a lot more poacher-like and he was just waiting. I think his all-round game has developed. But it also shows that the service drop to him, there is a slight service drop to him. There is a slight drop in fluidity when it comes in the attack. That wasn't there, according to me, at least in terms of providing chances, creating chances. So I won't say their attack, you know, beyond obviously the De Bruyne Haaland par, I won't say their attack is also so good that they're going to be scoring a lot as well. And I don't think Erling Haaland just turning around his overperformance is the only reason they're suddenly, all the goal scoring woes are gone and they can concede one extra. I don't think even that's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, I don't think it's straightforward. I think there are reasons behind the underperformance, as you say. I think City have become a little more predictable to defend against because they now rely on one front man. But I back Pep to work this out. As I said, there is much more signs of improvement recently, and Kevin De Bruyne is back. Yes, he came off against Liverpool, but I think you suspect after this international break, he's going to be a full-fledged starter and that their creativity improves. So I just keep coming back to this point, guys, that we're saying we've pointed out some valid flaws in the team right now. Valid flaws that I would recognise, but I'm simply still saying after their mid-season wobble, which was with a completely different personnel, and Pep's returned more to his old style and trying to control guys a little more. Since then, they've been top of the league.
Yeah, they've been the best.
And all the signs are they're going to get better.
Hold on. Now, let's take a look at their fixtures from their mid-season wobble, because I've just had a look, and it's a really very interesting set of fixtures, I have to say. Shall I read them for you?
No, you don't need to read them to me because I said them earlier.
But I think I do need to read them.
I read them earlier in the opening statement. I could read them again now. It was against Chelsea and Liverpool.
No, not that. The thing after, the fixtures where they have been the best team in the league. Let me read them. So Crystal Palace was the last draw. Then Everton, Sheffield United, Huddersfield FA Cup, Newcastle United, Tottenham, only remotely difficult fixture, which is 1-0. Again, FA Cup, by the way. Burnley, Brentford, Everton.
Objection. We're not talking about the FA Cup. We're talking about the Premier League.
Okay. Let me remove the FA Cup. Okay. It's better for me, actually. Yeah, I'll remove all cups. Here are their Premier League fixtures since the 27th of December, which is when they beat Everton. Right? Everton, Sheffield United, Newcastle United, Burnley, Brentford, Everton, Chelsea, Brentford, Bournemouth, Manchester United, draw with Liverpool. So now that was a streak of like 8 or 9 consecutive wins, all against lower half teams. And now they're facing difficult teams like Arsenal, Aston Villa, Tottenham, bogey team Chelsea, stuff like that. So I take it that they were the best.
I see where you're going, but
period.
I've only got 6 seconds, so I just want to quickly say those all teams are going to sit deep and deny your attack. Now they're going to be playing against teams who aren't going to sit deep, and you're going to score more.
They're still conceding to these teams.
No, end of argument.
Okay. Right, great stuff, guys. Shall we round us off with predictions where you may or may not further your defense or completely backtrack if you so desire? Who wants to go first?
I'm going to go first.
Go on.
My closing statement for Arsenal, I'm just going to read this list out. The lowest XGA, lowest post-shot XG conceded, lowest goals allowed, lowest shots on target allowed, second lowest shots allowed by one, giving away the highest opponent shot distance, lowest opponent shot quality, lowest opponent passes into the penalty area, lowest opponent crosses into the penalty area. Take any opponent metric, progressive passes, key passes, live passes, dead passes, carries into the penalty area.
We don't want to be talking dead passes, that's not good.
Oh, whatever, set piece passes. Arsenal ranked the best for all of these. They easily have the best defense, not just in the Premier League, but in Europe's top 5 leagues. And, you know, as a famous manager once said, defense wins you titles. So I don't see Arsenal conceding goals in this run-in. And I see them getting goals, whether by champagne football or by a hook or crook set piece, random goal from a Gabriel or a Rice, whatever the case may be. I see them having lots of clean sheets in this run-in. And having enough in attack. If I mean, it's not a champion attack, but having enough in attack to win goals. So the best defense wins you titles, and that's what's going to happen.
Right. That's a fair call. Now, Warren gave you a closing statement for Arsenal. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to give you my honest predictions, which is that, I don't know, to be honest, that's a great prediction. But yeah, like what I said about Liverpool, I obviously said, because that was the team I was defending, and I'm completely on board with it, by the way. But I mean, I do concede that it's a dicey route to go down, right? It's not an ideal sort of way to approach a Premier League title chase. So here's what I said in the group when we were discussing. I said that my head says Manchester City, my heart says Liverpool. But now after Varun's arguments, I do also, and our arguments against Alex, I would actually replace that with head says Arsenal and heart says Liverpool. I think it's going to be very, very close, obviously. Probably 1 or 2 points in it. But I think Arsenal have the quality and Liverpool have all the other factors. So what I'm going to say is it's going to be one of them. I'm going to say Manchester City don't win. That's my prediction.
Alex, I just wanted to add, I thought Liverpool were the tough one to defend. You know, that was like the toughest defense. Considering that, I thought you did a good job, Neil.
Thank you very much.
Okay, I'll be completely honest. I started this podcast thinking Arsenal were going to win the Premier League. After doing my section, I think City are going to win the Premier League. That's it, short and simple.
he said my defense was the best.
Yeah, I talked myself and I researched myself into thinking, oh yeah, City is going to win it.
After thinking about it for a while, I realized I am that good.
Yeah, I am that good.
I am the best one.
Wonderful. Well, this was a very fun episode either way. So thank you very much, guys, for joining me for this one. You can find all of us on Twitter. I'm at Shilat Neil. Alex is at @EuroExpert_. And Varun runs the @TheDevilsDNA account. And if you go to the @GetFootballEU account, in the bio, you'll find links to all our country and league-specific accounts where you can obviously follow them and be updated with all the latest news, videos, analysis, all sorts of stuff from around the world of football and Europe, specifically as we approach the end of the season, obviously in most of the major leagues. So do take a look at that. You can find those links in your show description or notes, wherever you're listening. And if your app does allow it, please do give us a 5-star review as well, because I thought it was a great episode, like I said. And feel free to share it as well. But anyway, thanks for listening. Thanks to you guys. We'll be back next week, probably with less debating, a bit more analysis. But hopefully we'll have fun either way. Bye-bye.